The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, March 14th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA says last growing season, Asian soybean rust made its way to Iowa. The agency made the announcement yesterday. Also, two U.S. senators say a study is needed to see if it's economically viable to ship ethanol via dedicated pipeline. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by to discuss weed control. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, $4.95 and a quarter, down 4 3/4. The May, $4.86 and 3/4, down 4 3/4. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat, $4.46, down 10. May, $4.63 and a quarter, down 3 1/4. July, $4.76, down 3 3/4. March corn, $3.89 and a half, down 7 1/2. May, $4.04 and 3/4, down 2. July, $4.15 and a quarter, down 2 1/2. December, $4.01 and 3/4, down 1. March beans, $7.36 and a half, down 7 1/2. May, $7.53 and a half, down 2. July, $7.68 and 3/4, down 3 1/4. November, $7.92 and a quarter, down 2 1/4. March soybean meal, $2.12.50, down $3.90. March soybean oil, $29.85, down 30. At the Merck March feeders, $105.92 and a half, up 27 1/2. April live cattle, $99.97 and a half, down 12 1/2. April lean hogs, $66.22 and a half, down 122 and a half. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the deferred contracts in the corn pit managed to claw their way back into positive territory by the end of the day. How did it manage to do that with everything else in the red?
Yeah. Well, we know the March contracts expired today, and we did note this morning that the scare in the marketplace was not only related to the 10 million acre conversation of more acres of corn in the world. It also had that the mortgage business, maybe one house out of eight in the state of California that has a loan against it, in default. We know that the marketplace is noticing that that's kind of scary, and the fact that that probably signals an economic slowdown in the world. And as we mentioned at our outlook meeting in the beef house, is that the commodity market, particularly the corn and soybean complex, it also watches the world and watches the stock markets around the world. And demand is an important part of that equation. So that was a noted deal. And we did note late in the trading day that the stock market was, I think, had over a 200-point range, but it was down as much as 100, and, I don't know, 20 or 30, 50 points at one time, and then came surging back late in the trading day. The crude oil market also made a nice U-turn and made a nice bottom. Some of these concerns about the housing industry and the interest rates and some lending institutions being in some trouble I think, will plague the market. But also another item that needs to be put to bed is just how many acres of corn will be planted. But in the meantime, there was profit-taking day to day, and we also heard that the Chinese were very aggressive buyers in the soybean market in Argentina and Brazil.
All of that adds up to a lower close pretty much across the complex today, and now we really need to be taking a look because the official trend at the 40-day moving average has been broken in the Cooley trendometer downward. We need to take a look and see where the bleeding...
I'm going to coin that because that's probably worth $100,000.
It probably is, the Cooley trendometer.
Yeah.
Where are the downside? I mean, if you look at May corn, we're getting close to now the 100-day moving average, and you wonder about the 38 percentage retracement
level. This is a tricky time in price forecasting here. And, you know, it's tricky for two things. We know that the cheaper the price goes, it does improve demand. A cheaper corn price also possibly discourages planting of corn in some of those fringe areas in the U.S. Corn Belt. And as a result of that, the weatherman is also giving us some wetter weather forecasts in the 14-day forecast models as we understand it. Your point's very well taken, and is that the trend is down, the trendometer is down, and that does equate for some nearby problems as well as the world deflation. As we mentioned, I'm not very bearish if the stock market is booming, and I'm not very bearish ag commodities if crude oil is surging. And, as I mentioned, the past is it's only two and two, and we can add another two if, ethanol demand is good and we're looking at fairly high gasoline prices, that no matter how much corn acreage they pile on us, it should also basically balance out in a year or two's equation. But in the meantime, they are giving us a good beating in here, and it's tricky to just determine how far it could go. My hunch is that it's not too far down on the downside.
You know, we're not that far away from that planting intentions report, and if it were to come out, say, at 8 million additional acres, this thing could turn on a dime.
It really could. And, any time when we talk about that type of a scenario, we're looking at 100 million bushels less carryover by USDA figures, and that equates out pretty good. You know, the big question is basically at 9 million acres, to 10, at 150 bushel yield, we could have the $4 corn, but at 155, we could have 3.25 corn. So, just 5 bushels an acre on this 9 to 10 million acres is a big, big change in demand and shows you how tight it is. You know, when we really go out and do our own calling and talk to our own friends, conservation is a big important item in some of these areas like Kentucky. High-priced fertilizer is a big factor in a lot of areas to slow the corn expansion, as well as $8 soybeans. So, there has been some things that's possibly changed some of these later surveys that are going to be popping out in here. And I think that the real verdict, along with the weather forecast, is still yet to be determined. And an acreage shift of 1 to 2 million acres is going to be extremely interesting.
And you brought up that word fertilizer. I read somewhere from the National Fertilizer Folk there's only about enough fertilizer for 87 million acres or so.
You know, that's an important factor because things don't do well without fertilizer. We can have some new, technology with seeds, but without fertilizer, it's a hard one to get the real bumper yields.
Let's turn our attention to the wheat before we let you go. I know it's not been something that you would like to trade. It's very tricky in here. But the thing that caught my eye today was March going off the board under what I would consider a pretty strong support level at 447.75.
Yeah, and a couple things is there is this big carry in the marketplace, and we are picking up some winter kill in some of the areas of central Illinois, and we are picking up that when people go out and examine the wheat plants, that maybe there are some that are alive in the market. You know, with this warmer temperatures, we're going to see a lot of change in the wheat fields in the next 10 days to 2 weeks. So everybody will be watching that very closely. My general impression is that wheat has pretty good value in the world, and as a result of that, we're really not going to see wheat as a real major burden on the marketplace. Back at the supply-demand estimates that the USDA was putting out in their Washington conference, they feel in some places wheat will become a feed grain and actually pressure the price of corn. The big factor here is that if there's a healthy wheat crop, it probably means that some of the extra corn acres that people are talking about will be harder to come by.
Thank you much, Paul.
Have a profitable day. It's always nice talking to you.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight. He says in northern Illinois, cloudy with scattered showers, mostly during the evening hours. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows from 32 to 58 degrees. Then tomorrow, in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy and cooler with scattered showers. In the south, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from around 40 in the far north to 66 degrees in the far south. The extended outlook, Indiana, slightly cooler than average weather expected on Friday for the two states. And some scattered flurries are possible coming up on Saturday. Milder weather arriving early next week. In agricultural news, USDA and Iowa State University say they have discovered Asian soybean rust on soybean residue recovered from a bin of soybeans produced in Iowa last year. The Iowa Soybean Association says the discovery should be a wake-up call for some producers who may have become complacent in scouting for soybean rust. The disease was first discovered in the U.S. in Louisiana in 2004. Add Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley to the growing list of lawmakers who are saying the commodity title of Farm Bill 2007 will not differ much from the 2002 version.
Except for some breakthrough on Doha, I expect that the farm commodity titles will be roughly the same as they are now, with maybe a little less money for two reasons, budget situations and diverting some money.
By the way, speaking of the Doha round, citing well-informed sources in Geneva, the Washington Tariff and Trade Letter is reporting that a deal on agriculture is near among key nations, including the U.S., European Union, and Brazil. The letter reports those three nations are trying to secure support from India. As Jonna Miller of the American Farm Bureau Federation reports, there's no time like the present to inspect your water well system.
The American Farm Bureau and the National Groundwater Association have teamed up to encourage farmers, ranchers, and other landowners to schedule an annual maintenance check of their well water systems.
Although many families are totally dependent on household wells for their water, many know very little about the system that delivers that water, or about the quality of the water itself.
Cliff Tryons of the National Groundwater Association says about half of all Americans get their drinking water from groundwater. That's also the source of more than 40% of all water for agricultural irrigation.
The other important thing for farmers and ranchers to keep in mind is if a well system or a pump is not delivering the water as efficiently, that translates directly into more energy cost to pump the same amount of water.
Tryon says people also need to have their water tested.
The basic recommendation is that people get their water checked annually for bacteria, nitrates, and anything else of local concern.
For more information, check www.wellowner.org. Jonna Miller, Washington.
Two U.S. senators have introduced a bill that would direct the Energy Department to study ways to ship ethanol by pipeline from the Midwest to the East and West coasts. The lawmakers, Democrat Tom Harkin of Iowa and Republican Richard Lugar of Indiana, pointed out that while ethanol is now shipped by rail, barge, and truck, demand for the largely corn-based gasoline alternative is soaring. At the same time, however, operational and economic concerns have been raised about the feasibility of shipping ethanol in petroleum-based pipeline infrastructure. The lawmakers say a continued surge in ethanol demand may make it more economical to ship through dedicated ethanol pipelines. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange will begin offering electronic trading virtually 24 hours a day on the CME Globex beginning June 4th. John Haringotti, director of commodity products at the CME, says the marketplace is dictating around-the-clock price discovery.
The reason why we're doing this is because the commodity sector has begun embracing electronic trading. Many of our customers are outside of the traditional time zones that we normally, the hours that we normally trade here. And so what we're doing is opening up these markets to make them available for people to trade in non-traditional U.S. hours.
Haringotti says the meat and livestock business is part of a growing global marketplace, and so it makes sense to offer improved risk protection through the exchange.
As an example, if you take a look at the amount of meat that's exported to other countries, particularly in the case of hogs, but also in the cattle industry, it's a significant amount of business, and we have people overseas that have price risk.
Futures will be available for trading beginning at 9:05 a.m. Monday through 1:30 p.m. Fridays, with a daily 60-minute trading halt commencing at 4 p.m. The Chicago Board of Trade added electronic day trade in 2006 and has seen tremendous volume since implementation. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Farmers know that you control weeds to save yield. Todd Gleason has this reminder that during times of very high prices, not dealing with a weed problem in a timely fashion can be very costly.
Weeds compete with the crop for sun and water. That's why it's important to get rid of them early in the season, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager. He says farmers who try to save money by delaying an herbicide application to catch more weeds or by lowering the application rate may actually end up costing themselves bushels. This year, more than most, he says, those dollars will add up quickly.
And if we just do simple calculations, let's say of the cost of weed interference on corn yield, we can see obviously at the difference between, let's say, $2 or $2.50 a bushel corn versus what farmers may be actually able to acquire this year in 2007, $4 or $4 plus corn. If you talk simply, you know, something easily, say a 5% yield loss potential. If weeds are allowed to compete too long with the corn crop before they're moved, 5% of 100 bushel is, you know, merely 5 bushel an acre yield loss. You know, at $2 an acre, that's only $10. If you go to $4 an acre, now you're talking a $20 an acre loss.
Here's where the weed specialist gets concerned. Many producers will, for the first time ever, use a glyphosate-resistant corn hybrid. They'll pay extra money for that seed, maybe on the idea that they can save money on the number of trips across the field and or on the amount of herbicides used. That's not necessarily the case.
Any weed species that emerges with the corn, those typically are your most competitive species and not necessarily the ones that come up 5 or 6 weeks after we plant. So the idea of reducing the cost of weed control inputs in glyphosate-resistant corn many times focuses on the idea, well, instead of using a full rate of a soil residual herbicide, we may reduce the cost by cutting that rate in half. So, for example, many times we think, well, I'll take a, let's say, a $20 an acre herbicide at a full rate and then cut that in half to try to reduce costs. So we'll spend $10 an acre for a soil residual program. If we're late in trying to come in then and clean up any escapes, and these escapes then are enough and significant enough to reduce corn yield loss, it's not going to take many bushels an acre in 2007 to make up that difference of $10 that the farmer tried to reduce his cost down.
It means, says Aaron Hager, that if a farmer tries to reduce input costs by either cutting the rates for soil residual herbicides, not using them at all, and or delaying the glyphosate application to catch a larger number of weeds on the thought of making just one pass, well then, those big weeds will compete for the sun and the water and lower yields. Because those bushels would have been worth more, the cost savings will be eaten up by the crop losses. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
And a good afternoon to you, Dave.
Futures have lost more than 10% since they posted their highs. Is this having any impact on the behavior of those who are marketing their grain?
Other than throwing stones at me every time they come in here, why, they're taking it pretty well. And really, Dave, this sell-off has probably exceeded probably what I even thought. You know, I mean, we've been knowing all along that this market got too high. I thought maybe 30 cents in corn and 50 in beans would hold it, and we are about 50 cents in beans, but the corn market has kind of surprised me a little bit that it's gone down this much. There's not been a lot of panic selling, but surprisingly enough, I'm a little surprised that rather than hanging on to all this corn they've got on the farm, which really isn't what as much as I think the government thinks there is, they're willing to bring it in, clean their bins out, they're putting it on DP or spotting it out and just taking their check to the bank and going on their merry way.
What do you think futures will do? We're now approaching 100-day moving averages.
Really, I think we've got more downside ahead. I don't think we're through with it yet. A bull market has to be fed, and there's really nothing bullish out there to feed this market right now. And you know, they acted like, you know, ADM's numbers of 10 million more corn acres shocked the heck out of them. Well, phooey, I mean, they've heard this before. And, you know, when they want to get into a bull market, they do. And when they want to get into a bear market, it takes something pretty earth-shattering to get the trend turned around. And it will. It'll turn around. And we'll just have to wait and see what the government says. And I don't think we'll see that much of a rebound before planting intentions. But time will tell. And I think the Stocks in All Positions report's going to tell us, are we cutting back on feed or are we not? I mean, there's arguments to every aspect of the grain market right now.
If the planting intentions report has a bullish surprise for beans, what will that mean for basis the 30 days following?
The basis levels are really, really sloppy. And even where we thought the corn basis levels would improve as farmers slammed their bin doors, because of this horrible weather we've had, everybody put off hauling until the weather got better. And now then elevators are full. They're full on corn. They're full on beans. And bean basis levels are sloppy because really nobody really wants them and the pipelines are full. So Dave, I don't think these basis levels are going to improve a lot unless we really see some weather problems.
What about your prices today, Kay?
Cash corn is $3.77 today. Cash beans are $7.09, and cash wheat today is $3.60.
Thank you much, Kay.
Thank you, Dave.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. And in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A number of Illinois public universities are calling for a dedicated amount of money from the state each year for healthcare education. That includes teaching hospitals and other facilities that train tomorrow's doctors, dentists, and nurses. University of Illinois trustee Dr. Ken Schmidt says the so-called Illinois Bill of Health is an outline of what schools need to help fend off an impending shortage of healthcare professionals. At the head of the list is the U of I Chicago, which is the only school that operates a teaching hospital in the state. Schmidt says lawmakers in the Blagojevich administration will eventually get a specific funding request. Governor Rod Blagojevich and his wife have strong financial ties to a businessman whose wife has been charged with cheating state government. Amrish Mahajan himself hasn't been charged with any crime, but his wife Anita was arrested last week for overbilling the State Department of Children and Family Services. The Chicago Tribune reported today the husband has helped raise at least $500,000 for Blagojevich's political campaigns. He also used Patty Blagojevich as his real estate agent on several deals, generating $113,000 in commissions for her. The families were close at one point, but Blagojevich says he now has no relationship with Mahajan. Mahajan's attorney says he's done nothing improper. Two Michigan residents are facing drug charges in central Illinois after authorities say they found 60 pounds of marijuana in a duffel bag at a traffic stop. State police say the arrest happened near Normal when a minivan was stopped for improper lane usage. Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard is now beginning his fifth term. Yesterday, he was sworn in Evansville in the Vandenberg County courtroom where he served as a Superior Court judge for 5 years. The Evansville resident was appointed to the state's highest court in 1985 by then-Governor Robert Orr. Shepard has served as Chief Justice since 1987. The Chicago City Council has agreed with Mayor Richard Daley's plan to put $500 million in local tax dollars behind efforts to bring the 2016 Olympics to the city. The council approved a plan on a 45-5 vote today. Alderman Danny Solis called the deal a no-brainer, but another alderman, Tony Preckwinkle, says she voted against it because she's worried about finances. The plan would put the city on the hook if the 2016 Olympic operating budget lost money, but other private and public funds would be tapped first. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We've enjoyed some warmer temperatures in the last few days across the corn and soybean belts here in the U.S. But I wonder, with that warming trend, might we see showers in the future?
Yes, I think we will. We have a cool front that is dropping southward as we speak from Canada. We'll be bringing some much colder air across the Midwest as we go through the rest of this week, actually. Temperatures will probably bottom out in a pretty nippy little range on Friday into Saturday morning. And before we get into the coldest air, we will see some scattered showers across the region. I don't think any of the rain's going to have a lot of meat to it. Probably 0.2 inch or less will occur in much of the production area across the Midwest. I think some areas in the east, like Ohio, and maybe southeastern Indiana and eastern Kentucky could get anywhere from 0.2 to maybe 0.75 inch of rain out of this deal. But the further west you go across the belt, we don't expect to see the rains be very well distributed. There'll be a lot of areas that are either totally dry or just get a few sprinkles of rain, and that's about it. And it will definitely be cooler. We'll be looking at temperatures dropping down into the 20s and 30s across the region again for lows. Some teens will occur in the far northern parts of the region. It looks like our high temperatures will be 30s and 40s in the north and 50s in the south. The cool weather will only last for a couple of days, though. We will turn around and try to warm things back up a little bit this weekend. Another reinforcing shot of cool air on Sunday night into Monday. It should come with a dry front. And then after that, we'll get into some more serious warming trend will take place in the second week of the two-week outlook. Unfortunately, the news is also wet for the western half to two-thirds of the Corn Belt from the 22nd all the way out through the 28th or 29th of March. So a lot of rain coming up in the longer range.
What's the latest La Nina talk?
La Nina is still evolving. We are expected to reach the threshold of La Nina a little bit late this month, more likely early April. And then we're going to hold at a status quo level for about 3 to maybe 5 weeks. There's not much reinforcing cold water headed into the region, so we're going to end up seeing La Nina, a borderline La Nina, let's put it that way, going into the early part of April. And in May, we'll probably start to see a little bit of intensification occur, and especially in June and July. La Nina should be a moderate event by the time we get to the end of the growing season.
So if I hear you right, we are still trending toward wetter weather during planting season.
Absolutely, yes. especially for the western Corn Belt, but probably as far to the east as Illinois as well.
All right. Turn your attention to South America. What's going on in Brazil and Argentina?
We have a lot of rain. It has fallen in Argentina in the past week to 10 days, and one last round of rain is moving through there over the next two or three days. And so the harvest delays in sunseed and early corn-producing areas will continue. We've had some quality losses in many of the sunseed-producing areas in Argentina. That's the crop that's most sensitive to the moisture right now. And this wet bias has begun to extend to the northeast across Uruguay and into southern Brazil. And we've had some damage done to the rice crop in some of that area. And it looks like over the next 3 to 4 days, there will be another 1 to 3 inches and maybe some 4-inch amounts of rainfall in parts of Uruguay and Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil. And that will likely create some additional harvest concerns, not so much for corn or soybeans in Rio Grande, but for that rice crop. The rest of Brazil has seen some excellent harvest weather in the past week, and we expect that to continue for another couple of days. But some of this heavy rain I've just described will move into the central crop production area as we get into the late weekend and the early part of next week, which will delay them for a little while. But there shouldn't be any negative impact.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash green analysis, and weather on our website. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.